You're listening to the Monica Cade Podcast, a conscious approach to all things health and lifestyle, empowering you to be your best self in each moment. Because the truth is, that's all we ever have. From conscious lifestyle tips that'll help you make better choices in all areas of your life, through to interviews with game-changing entrepreneurs, creative minds, and thought leaders. These conversations move me. They're changing the world, and I hope they impact yours. So, without further ado, let's dive into this week's conversation. Hello and welcome to the Monica Cade Podcast. Joining me for episode 110 is Jody Evans, the CEO and founder of CocoLux, a range of premium fortified coconut waters made from 100% single origin coconut and uplifted with nature's best health boosting properties. Unlike other coconut water companies on the market, Jody is the only woman to lead the way for the budding coconut water industry in Australia, which is pretty cool. She's a bit of an entrepreneur, so we're going to find out more about her story. But for now, let's welcome her to the conversation. Hi, Jody. Thanks for joining me.
Hi. Thanks for having me. My first podcast, so... Pretty exciting.
Well, I'm glad to be your first podcast. So tell me a little bit about, you've been a bit of an entrepreneur since you were quite young. So tell me a little bit about your first lot of businesses growing up.
Yes. So I fell into running multiple businesses over the course of my life. I'm a bit of an opportunist, as it were. So my first one was I had a boyfriend that I was living with at the time when I was 18, and he was a professional surfer or a semi-professional surfer. And what we identified was that was back in the day when the Japanese tourism market was really taking off. And we thought it was really interesting to play in the tourism market using surfing as our underpinning point of difference because we knew what we're doing. So we threw a business together where I did beach awareness, which was hilarious. I literally walked around the beach going, oh, look, here's a rock pool, that's a starfish, and giving them a little bit of an introduction. We're in Bondi and Bronte, and my boyfriend at the time got him and a couple of his mates together, gathered up all of their wetsuits that were lying around. We took them surfing. We introduced them to surfing. So, yeah, that was quite funny, and we had quite a number of people pass through our business in a short period of time, about 6 months, yeah. And then we realised you needed permits and insurances and, you know, all of these business-type things, and so we really didn't continue after that. It was like 6 months in. We went, okay, that's fine.
Did you, aside from him having the experience with surfing, did you also participate in surfing? Did you have, like, some surf awareness and things like that?
I did because of his introduction. I mean, I grew up in Cronulla Beach, and so I've grown up around surf culture my whole life. Yeah. I was a surf judge. I tried to surf a few times in my life, maybe a handful of times. I wasn't very good at it. Just didn't have the upper body strength to really push that board down. So I would try and duck dive and always get smacked in the face. So that was not the most glamorous thing to do. But the boys used to put me on a board and pull me at the back and make me take photos of them. So that was my job. I was their photographer. You know, growing up on the beach, you kind of know your way around it a little bit. At least I could point out what a rip was, which was important to tourists in the area. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. That's cool. Okay, and then from there, was your next business your marketing agency?
Yeah, so I started a promotional business on behalf of a large PR agency, Houseman Communications, which is still around. Back then, I mean, now you would call it an activation agency, but back then we used to just call it promotion. So we delved into brand activations, on-pack promotions, prizes. Used to do a lot of stuff for the Today Show and Sunrise. And so I took quite a few products to market on the activation side. So Link Studio, One, Best Chips, Marriott Hotels, we had this broad spectrum. So I would have people out in the field representing those products, and we grew the business. I literally had it in my household. I was about 22, I think, at the time. Mm-hmm. I had 300 staff across Australia and a guarantee to my clients that if anyone didn't show up, I would. And that happened a lot. So that wasn't that fun. But, yeah, we had a lot of success. And when we went out and did post-campaign surveys on how what the cut-through was and how recognisable it was, we had this huge undertaking that we were really propping up the premise of their whole marketing budget. So, you know, we just gained more traction and more budget allocation over the years that that passed from when we started. And I think that they still have a very big division in that field today. So that was, you know, 20 years ago. It's a, you know, it's a fundamental part of anyone's marketing mix these days, activation and promotion.
I find that incredible that you were so young and you just went on to create such a successful business. Did you come from a family that had any background in business, or your parents were entrepreneurs or anything like that? Or how did you learn the skills to kind of get yourself to that place?
So my father was a head engineer for Schindler Lifts and started another company with a couple of the business partners that he had there called Liftronic. So he was a highly educated functional business person, which is not necessarily what I describe myself as, especially at the time. I was just the type of person that would say yes and figure it out. I never really thought that once you had the internet, you had a reason to ask questions. You could always find a way and find an answer. And if you really want to do something, you can do anything that you want. Uh-huh. I've got three older sisters. Two of them came from public service background. One's in Sydney Water, the other one's in Sydney Electricity, which is something else now. Uh-huh. And one was in marketing. And the sister that was in marketing used to have me look at her five-year plans for Kellogg's Nutri-Grain, because she worked for Kellogg at the time. So she was always throwing it, and she's 13 years older than me, throwing it to me, going, well, just go and read that. Tell me if you've got any notes. And I was, you know, a teenager.
Wow.
Especially being the youngest of four, you become entrepreneurial by nature, because you become very clever at getting your own way and flying under the radar. Yeah. And working things out to your advantage, because, you know, parents are pretty busy with three in front of you. So, yeah, I think that was something that went in my favour.
That's amazing. That's so cool and inspiring to see, I guess, that you even had, like, siblings that were willing to kind of, you know, give you those ideas or those opportunities, you know, because I guess not all families would have that kind of a relationship with their siblings. So you obviously have a good connection with them.
Yeah, I do. We lost both of our parents a while ago, so we have a really strong connection between the four of us, and we're at various different stages of our life, which has been interesting. So when they were all having children, I was still flitting around. It was always the joke of, what business card do we have today and where do you live? What's happening? So I was always that kid for a long time. I'm a lot more settled now. So, yeah, it's just interesting to see the different phases of your life and what becomes a priority. And I always absorb that information these days, because that's how I interpret what market might do, where trends might lie, what's important to people at different stages is how we should develop new product. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's good having that around me. And they keep me incredibly grounded, because I can't get away with anything. they see right through it.
Someone to call you out.
Yeah, and often do.
Oh, it's nice to have that. Tell me how you decided that you wanted to launch Coco Lux.
Coco Lux was born about from my time as CEO of another coconut water company. So the company was in, in distress, shall we say. I was brought on into a marketing role in this business, and it wasn't something, I didn't come from an FMCG background. I represented many clients in my time from that space, but I wasn't by any means educated or at the forefront of that particular market or industry. And when I was brought in from a marketing perspective, I knew that there was something a little bit wrong with the way in which they were doing things. So I just sort of sat back and did my time, and then I decided to leave because it wasn't really the right fit for me. And after I left, the owners of the business were located in Saudi Arabia. They asked me to come back and to take the business over. And we had at that point a global footprint. We didn't necessarily have distribution, but we had some product. Some had to go away. So, and I had staff in India, Malaysia, China, Australia and the US. So that was a bit of a baptism of fire. And so I did that, and I managed to pull the business back in, redo the product mix, rebrand, push it back out to market and then facilitate it getting on shelves. In we had distribution by the time I left in 2 years in Australia, including Woolworths. We had major grocery chain in the US. We had a factory in Malaysia. There was all this sort of stuff going on. But the whole time that I was with the business, I saw the coconut water industry boom. Mm-hmm. It was huge. It was happening everywhere. But if you went down the coconut water aisle, there was no difference between one to the next. They all had coconuts on front. It was all blues and greens. It was all just same, same. And I always thought if I was going to do this myself, and I had the freedom to do this myself in the way I wanted to do it, I would do it differently. So that's exactly what I did. As soon as I left, the very next week I went to China. I walked around an expo and I went, you know what, I'm going to do things differently. I'm going to do it my way, because I think there is a massive gap in the market and we're not taking on the functionality side of things. And so that's where I wanted to play. And I also wanted it to look different. No more coconuts.
That's really cool. So did you personally also love coconut water?
I loved the nutritional value that was naturally occurring in coconut water. I didn't love the variation in quality that was on the market. I found that quite confronting, especially when you go to all the factories and you know exactly where everyone is formulating and where they're coming from. I didn't find the honesty perhaps there in transparency of source and efficacy. So I really wanted to tackle those issues as well. Mm-hmm. I didn't just want to be just another one, and I didn't want to compete on a price point and be in this, you know, desperate bid to the bottom.
Yeah.
I really liked the natural carrier pigeon. It's a carrier pigeon rather than formulating with just water. Why wouldn't you use something that has potassium already naturally occurring and has this beautiful flavour to it? And if you do it the right way and you formulate the right way, you can have as much of those nutrients and retain them as possible, and then fortify them with additional ones that people want in their everyday life. Why should we be bound by potions and pills?
Take me back a little bit to why is it important for you to be sustainable? So maybe could you give us a little bit of a background without obviously naming other brands or anything like that, but what is the industry of creating coconut water actually like, and how have you differentiated?
Well, look, from my perspective, I'm a huge believer in the environmental impact in which we perform on a day-to-day basis. I was a Facebook ranter from way back, and I am a huge animal advocate. My house is like a zoo. I have dogs, cats, rabbits, you name it. I always wanted to do more, and I found myself so incredibly time poor that what I was doing was I was enabling my frustrations and my disappointment in the way in which we're going just as a community of people on social media. So what's the point of that? Other than telling the 100 friends that you've got that you're annoyed, there's no purpose to that. So I really took it, I knew with this business that I had to map out the steps and do the best that I possibly could each step of the way. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not perfect, and I'm not going to be perfect for a while, because there are roadblocks along the way. So when I went into, say, packaging, for an example, and went, okay, so what am I going to package in? To be in a can meant that the production side of things and the source and the factory was not ideal. It didn't fit within my values. And so for me, I wasn't able to do a tin can, which is the best way in which you could become lower your waste footprint, because it's fully recyclable. So the next thing I went into was to look into plant-based tetra options. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, when you speak to the Environmental Protection Agency in Australia, they're not ready. They don't have the technology. Mm-hmm. You will, by putting a plant-based product into a recycling bin, it taints the whole recycling process.
Wow.
So there is some gap. Yeah, there's some gaps in that process that it's going to be more harm than good for me to do things like that. So for me, I have a sustainably sourced paper product. The process to fill Tetra is highly, it's unique and patented technology. That means it's the best you can get, and it's protected, and it's there is no possible contamination. It's very high resource. I use the best factory of its kind. I was their first ever client with my last job. So So I still keep going, even though they're most expensive, I still keep going back to them because I know they're the best. Mm-hmm. And the one thing that I had in my process was the plastic cap. So that for me was always a bugbear that I still have a piece of plastic. So I had to find a home for those pieces of plastic. So we're actually doing some collaborations with the caps for prosthetic arms for children. So we're going to be doing some collection points for those guys. What I saw with the other brands was not their fault. It was unfortunately driven by a price war. Mm-hmm. And so perhaps they weren't taking the necessary steps to make sure that their waste was as low as it could be, their efficacy, their honesty. We have social audit policy in our factories, which means that no worker works above or beyond the time allocated. They have the required system and structure to make sure that everybody's protected. Not sure everybody can say that, but for me, being a person that was environmentally focused, an animal, I don't call myself an activist, I'm an animal advocate, but I'm not going to do something for a living where I can't sleep at night. I just can't do that. So, yeah, there's a bit of a, I think there is always going to be that time in a company's life where you want to try and make change, and it's always difficult to undo what you do. So I'm trying to go from the first moment as best as I possibly can and continue to do that.
I think it's really admirable that, you know, you're willing to, you know, go that extra mile because you do care so much about the environment, the animals, you know, and it must be challenging. I mean, I know you believe in these things, so it's not challenging for you. It's a no-brainer. You want to sleep at night. And I can understand also probably I don't think people necessarily go into business with the intention of doing harm, but obviously when it comes to running a business, people make certain decisions and things like that. But for our listeners, this is a good coconut water for many reasons other than your health. It's great for the environment as well.
True, true. And we're looking for better options all the time. So I know people have an issue with Tetra, especially in this country because we're recycling snobs, but we're at the forefront. We're with the EPA all the time having these conversations of what would you like us to do?
Yeah, yeah. Tell me about the branding and the packaging, because you do obviously, like you mentioned before, you wanted something that was different to all the other coconut waters, and your product is visually beautiful. When I got a sample myself, I was just like, oh, wow, this is so pretty. Like it just, you know, it makes a difference. It gave me a feeling of feeling uplifted and really wowed. So how did you come to create that?
So the brief to the agency originally, so I had a creative director that I was working with previously, and he and I decided to work on this together. And my brief to him was, I don't want to look like everybody else. And I also don't want to be male focused. And I found that the other brands had, even though there was a female uplift in terms of consumption, I didn't feel like we were targeting females specifically. And I didn't necessarily go out there specifically to target females, but I wanted to be, we have glass fridges. We've got outdoor fridges that are glass in our outdoor kitchens. We've got, you know, LG fridges that you can tap and see in. We're all merchandising our homes every single day. Why don't we want our products to look like they're merchandisable and they're succinct and they look like a really pretty, beautiful presentation of something that is beautiful and presents well on the inside as well? Mm. Why do we have to associate natural products with these earthy colours? It was just like this really old-fashioned, antiquated, well, you know, I may as well rub it in dirt because that'll, you know, make it look like it's really come from a good source. It was just weird to me. Why can't it be beautiful? So there was a few designs that they presented to me and I was instantly drawn to the stripes. Mm-hmm. The stripes to me, which, by the way, is a big fat pain in the backside to replicate in other areas for your marketing purposes when you're printing it. It's getting the shelf talkers the right colour. It's a pain in the backside. But, yeah, I wanted it to be unashamedly pretty and I wanted it to appeal to the people that are going to go along and turn it around and make sure that they're all facing forward and take pride in it.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was the initial assumption. And then I the first market that I launched in was China. So I went over to when we got on shelf and I stood in the supermarket for 45 minutes seeing every eye line of where I could see the colour, where it popped, where did it fall back and it, you know, sort of melted into the rest.
Yes.
Yeah. A little bit strange like that.
Well, I don't think so. I feel like, you know what you want and you're looking also to create a certain feeling for your customer, which is, I think, really important when it comes to, you know, overall brand development anyway. And I think you've done that really beautifully. And it definitely stands out on the shelf, that's for sure. I was walking through Harris Farm the other day and I was just walking past this corner. I was like, oh, there it is, you know. So, yeah, and then it made me pay attention to like the other waters and things around it and everything like that. So it definitely stood out. So that's some personal feedback there as well.
That's good. And also the imagery, you know, brands of today, they have to be Instagrammable. They just do. It's an, you know, necessary evil in all of our lives that people post and want to see content. And so to have a beautiful looking product, it's a lot easier for me to then approach other brands that want to collaborate together who have the same aesthetic and values that we do. And that it's been quite interesting, the level of response that I've had from the media in the United States has been huge. We've had Vanity Fair say to us that as soon as you're here, let us know because we want to represent, we want to do the first event with your products.
Wow.
And all this stuff, and you go, but it's just a coconut water. And then you think, no, this is the exact reason why we wanted it to look different, because we didn't want to be another eye-rolling coconut water.
Yeah.
And so for that, you have to look different.
I'm amazed that they haven't already come up with something, you know, because I remember I lived in New York about close to 10 years ago now. And when I was living there, the coconut water was all the rage. And when I came back to Australia, no one had even heard of it. So it's been a long time since then, and I remember the packaging from back then, and in Australia, nothing has really changed that much. You know, there's a few other things, but yours really makes a statement on the market. You know, it's really something completely different. So I think it's cool that, you know, you're bringing your market to the US as well, and they're loving it too. Very beautiful.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it's certainly garnered some interest over there, and you know, we've only just had stock in the last month, but it's filtering out to shelves now. But I did a few expos over the last year, and the first time I went over there with my product, I went to an event called BevNet, which is a beverage industry event, and it's like a symposium, and they have sample fridges. And as a new brand, I can put my product in there, and I literally. Half an hour after having my product in these shelves, I got a text message from a Coca-Cola incubator in LA saying, can you just meet with us downstairs? Can we have a chat? Uh-huh. And the first thing they said was, oh, my God, I don't know why we haven't thought about this before. How did you think about collagen and coconut water? It's like, how did you not?
Which is great, because I was actually wanting to ask you about that so our listeners can hear about that. I'm a big fan of collagen. So when your PR agency sent me through the information about you and I was reading about the product and everything, I was like, oh, now this is cool. Like, I've not heard about this before, you know, infusing it with collagen. So where did that brainwave idea come from?
I follow the trends in supplement market. Mm-hmm. So the pills and potion market is always going to lead the rest. Mm-hmm. And what we then try to do is find ways that we can consume it without having to buy a bag of pills. Mm-hmm. So I saw collagen a long, long time ago, and I was watching the wave for a while. And there's a couple of other interesting ingredients that are on my radar too that I'm still looking at intensely and wondering where it's going to go next and how I can use it. So it's just something that I've been passionate about for a very long time. With the collagen, I wanted to provide collagen plus vitamin C, which is why I have a collagen SKU and a vitamin C SKU, because you actually need both, one to retain it, one to provide your body's natural ability to produce collagen, and then giving you a bit of marine collagen. So it was just one of those things that I just thought, if I'm going to have a pretty pink packaging and she's going to be a beautiful looking product, what is the thing that everybody wants in their beauty regime? It's collagen. Mm-hmm. And a lot of brands flooded the market, because this was in 2017 that I had this product. From then, it's everywhere. I think for me, the important thing for consumers is to figure out where your collagen's coming from. That's the next wave of education. So I don't need to do the education on collagen because everybody knows it's great for your skin. It's beautiful. It's a natural thing that you need to have for your joints. There's so many benefits to having collagen outside of just the beauty regime. Uh-huh. The next thing I want people to start looking at is what source is it coming from? I formulated with marine collagen that is an upcycled waste product because I didn't really want to go kill something that wasn't already deemed for food.
Yeah.
So I'm repurposing the byproduct of the fish skin and scales into collagen peptides. A lot of the other collagen on the market's a bovine, and that comes from cows. So that didn't fit within my ethics. And I just find that with the marine collagen too, it just is far more absorbable and easier to use. And if you formulate it right and it tastes good, it's a good little kick for your beauty regime. My hair, I had a bob a year ago, and my hair, I've had it cut constantly. So it makes your hair grow at a rate of knots.
That sounds good because you can see my hair looks long, but the truth is my hair doesn't seem to grow past this length. So I feel like it's very slow growing, like it's long, but it just doesn't seem to want to grow faster. So maybe I need some more coconut water with collagen in me.
I'll sort you out. I know somebody. It'll be fine. The only bad part is having to get your eyebrows done probably every few minutes. Right. Yeah. That's a little bit of a downfall. Yeah.
Well, sometimes you've got to have those trade-offs, don't you?
Oh, exactly.
Tell me, what is it like in your home, because you have children as well, what is your perspective around teaching them around business, because, you know, you have your own business. What do you teach them?
So my daughter, who's six, wrote me a letter yesterday actually saying that it was, "Dear Coco Lux, I want to come and work for you when I'm older. Can you please pay me?" So she had the mix right. She wanted to work, but she also wanted remuneration. So she's already started the negotiation process. I get my kids involved as much as possible. So they will pack online orders. They will watch. They watch me work all the time, and I show them what I'm doing all the time. They drink the product. My daughter takes the collagen coconut water glow to school all the time. So now I have a group of mothers that I sort out at school. But other things that I make them do is, because ethics is just, it's so important to me. So I volunteer for the Animal Justice Party as well. I'm a member of their political party. And so we go and do their stalls. So the kids stand on the stall with me and we sell some merchandise and we talk to people about animal ethics and all that rest of it. As soon as I have a Coca-Cola stall, they'll be out there doing that as well. They have to realise that I was never given anything. My parents gave me an amazing upbringing, but I had a job when I was 12 and a half. I could not wait to get out there and start working and having my own money and the freedom that came with deciding my financial future by it being my money. It's no longer the parents' money. It's mine. I earned it. So that's the part I'm trying to instill in them. So when they do work for us, my husband and I, because he has his own business as well, we make sure that we remunerate them appropriately. Mm-hmm. And that incentivizes them to keep going. So my son, I think, wants to be a pilot. He's obsessed with planes. He's 10. But my daughter is very much, other than being Beyonce, because that happens sometimes too.
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah, the sass is real. she definitely wants to go into her own business because she sees the creative side of things, and I think that really draws her to it.
Yeah, that's awesome. Very inspiring as well. I love that, you know, that she's taking it to school as well. She's almost like doing, you know, like a little lemonade stand but a coconut water thing when taking it to school. She's your little marketing team.
Well, they had a Ninja Warrior Day, which was fundraiser for the school, and they had a big blow-up thing, and they incentivized the kids to go and raise money for it because you got more time on the course, which was just a stroke of brilliance because, they just wanted to stay out there all day. So Daddy's business, which is called Land HQ, my husband has a tractor dealership, he sponsored my son and I sponsored my daughter. However, she needed some product placement. So she went and took three of the Coco Luxes to her friends. And I was like, you're my first paid brand ambassador.
That's so good. I love it. The innocent.
Yep. Nothing's for free.
Totally. Our interview is coming to a close, but before we do wrap up, I've got some signature questions for you that I ask all of my guests. But before I do ask you that, is there anything else that you'd love to share with our listeners about Coco Lux that we haven't covered yet?
Look, I think they can find out more about us by following us on Instagram and on our website and Facebook and all those sort of things. I think the one thing I would say, there is a lot of women out there that are struggling with the amount of pressure that we put on ourselves to do so much. I would want to say to everyone out there that we all feel it and we're all the same, and to empower yourself by knowing that you can do whatever it is that you want to do, but you don't have to do everything. I think I struggle with taking on so much all the time. And the more that I'm talking to other friends of mine and who are mothers, that seems to be a really common occurrence with females at the moment, is that we're just doing absolutely everything and we're never saying no.
Yeah.
And I think that's a modern day problem that you're going to have to start figuring out where your no line is. And that's something that I put on my to-do list for this week. I can't do everything all the time. So you can find out about the brand and all the rest of it. But I don't know, if there are other female entrepreneurs out there or want to be entrepreneurs or people in business, figure out how to say no to some things, because you have to. It gets a little overwhelming otherwise.
Yeah, and I love that you call it the no line. I haven't heard it in that particular way before, but I think, you know, figuring out where your no line is so true, because I think we do live in a time where we are so lucky that we have all this opportunity, you know, with technology, and we can create and do all these amazing things. And yes, there is that pressure as well, that now that we can do all this stuff, then it's almost like it's become expected that we do it all if we can. Yeah, I think
that's exactly right.
Yeah, it's just getting clear for each of us. And I feel like every one of our listeners, and, you know, we're all going to be different in where that lies. And I think once we kind of, I know the more clear I am with myself around what's important and what I'm going to say yes to, it's like, you know, that pressure that we put on ourselves, it lifts off.
Yeah. Yeah, because at the end of the day, you know, we're all just doing our best, and when you're rushing through the school gates and I have my daughter looking at me going, everybody else's hair is braided, why can't you braid? You know, there's always going to be something. You can't be everything to everyone. And for me, I am not a hair braider. I am never going to be that person. I don't know. I'm all thumbs. I can't do it. So, yeah, I'm really trying to put some barriers because if anybody asked me anything, I would be the first one there to do it. And now just putting a no line in.
Yeah, beautiful. Thank you. All right, so for our signature questions, if you weren't in your current career path, what would you like to attempt?
I am fascinated with cannabis market.
Oh, yeah?
I've been researching that for a long time as well. The medicinal premise of cannabis is extraordinary. It is absolutely extraordinary. So I'm interested in that. Unfortunately, I lost both my parents before the time due to cancer-related illnesses. Mm. So for me to work in that space, given the opportunity, I would love it. And also solving packaging issues. Mm. I would love to work in plastic replacements and things like that. So they would be passion projects for sure next.
Next. I love that.
Next. Well, I'm doing one at the same time.
Is there a piece of wisdom that you've acquired through self-experience or that someone's passed on to you in your life that you use today?
You'd be amazed at how resourceful you can be. Mm-hmm. I didn't come from this background, but if you ask me a regulations question or a formulation question or a sourcing question, I could answer it. You just become this amazing sponge. And also just to know where it is that your gaps are and be honest about them. Sometimes I get overwhelmed and paralyzed into not sending an email or a document because I think how it's going to be perceived.
Sure.
And I don't think that I'm going to say the right things or do the right things. And a couple of times fairly recently, especially when it comes to capital raising and all that, because that's it's not something that I'm familiar with. Realizing that if I actually come with my honesty pants on and just say, here's what it is. This is exactly where I want to go. This is what the brand represents. This is what the product range is. These are the things that I have. What I don't have is a very slick, cool looking document just yet, but I'll get you one. It's just, you know, don't be afraid to say that I know a lot of things, but I don't know everything.
I think that's such a refreshing perspective. I think it ties really beautifully to the no line, because you can't possibly know everything. And I don't think we need to know everything. In my personal experience and opinion, I don't feel like you need to know everything. There are other people that will step in who love to do certain things too. And it's like, you know, we each have something we're great at. So let's focus on our strengths as well.
Yeah. And I think you get, listening to podcasts, the availability of information paralyzes you in a way, because you feel inadequate. You're watching Shark Tank one moment, and then you're watching a podcast of these amazing brand builders, and you kind of think, oh, gee, I'm not going to have the right words to say or the right context, and I feel like my document is probably not as slick as it could be, whatever that is. I think just go for it and do it, because the worst case scenario is someone just looks at you and goes, probably it's a no from me, and you think, okay, well, then you're not the right person for me. So, it's like dating. Business is like dating. You've got to get along with people. You've got to work on the same ethics and emotional profile that you're built off. You can't force yourself to be someone different, even in a business sense. So for me, I have no intention of trying that.
That's a powerful line there. I like it.
Thanks.
Okay, and my final question for you is, what do you feel is your greatest asset?
I'm tenacious.
Yes, I get that just from you, just somehow from our conversation.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm that person that the trade shows that I've done, standing in the middle of Shanghai with pretend product at the time, they were pilot samples, and I just go and do it and figure it out later. You're like the duck. You're pretty calm on top, but there's this emotional, anxiety-ridden ball of self-doubt underneath the surface, and you just sort of make it work, and you just sort of pull things up and try the next thing, and you're going to make mistakes. Everybody does. But if you want to do something, you just got to give it a go. Just get out there, give it a try, find other people in your space to learn from, and run as fast as you can.
Amazing. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me and sharing that beautiful journey in creating this product. I think not often, we see these beautiful brands, but we don't always get to see the story of them coming into life. So I appreciate you sharing all that with us.
Thank you. It's been lovely to chat with you, my first ever podcast.
Woohoo! And for our listeners, you can find all the show notes and all the links to Coco Lux, and be sure to go grab yourself a bottle or five, All right.
They look good as a pack.
Exactly. The colours complement each other. You're not going to just want to pick one, that's for sure.
That's true.
Awesome. Thank you again.
Thank you so much.